Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelzang. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Partnership Program, our guest today, Scott Turow, will be presenting his wide-ranging subjects and expertise, including his new book, Testimony, May 18th in Washington, D.C. at the Ridley Center. For ticket information, please check our website or at smithsonianassociates.org. Scott and I know each other from the world of copyright, where both of us have helped protect artists' rights. Scott is a well-known advocate, does much more than I, and much more than most, to balance the goals of a free society and balance the needs of content creators and preserving artists' rights against the technology companies who hope to profit from looser copyright policies to provide content more freely online. In anticipation of our conversation today, I want to quote William Blake, the visionary artist and poet of the 18th century, who says, "A blight never does good to a tree, and if the tree still bear fruit, let none say that the fruit was in consequence of the blight." Creative drive can often withstand periods of blight, but as Blake says, creativity is not in consequence of the blight. That means that the protection of copyright, so that artists can enjoy the figurative fruits of their labors, is deeply related to the protection of creativity. The best of Shakespeare's plays, Dickens and Tolstoy's novels, and the Beatles' music were all created at the apogee of success when their creators were living in relative comfort earned by the popularity of their work. Scott talks about this too. Very little is likely to damage creative output more than a refusal to protect copyright. Scott, I have to ask you one question. I know you're very busy, but I know you a little bit from your work as Authors Guild president and your work during a very turbulent time for American authors. And, you know, that's still the case. There's this balance probably between writers and readers. That's an important one, as well as with artists' rights. And, you know, it's almost as though, you know, book prices may come down. That might be good for readers, but authors' incomes come down too, and that might not be so great for creativity. And not to dive too deeply into the whole subject of copyright law and fair use and free content and digitization, all of those kinds of things, ebooks. But I wonder if you would take just a second and talk a little bit about authors' income. And, you know, it's one thing to be at the top of the food chain and, you know, not necessarily have to experience these kind of some of these issues about income. But it's another to be kind of the other end of that spectrum, maybe not be able to make a living and maybe not as a public be able to have some of these voices out there too. So these are also complicated issues. I know it's a passion of yours, and so I wanted to take just a minute and have you talk a little bit about that subject.
Well, thank you very much for asking about it, because this is a subject that is dear to my heart. And as you point out, you know, it is probably, certainly it has been a better time for the last several decades to be a best-selling author. It's been, the rewards have never been greater. So the complaints I make are not made in my own behalf. I am extraordinarily blessed. And all of the institutions that I complain about, particularly Amazon, have been wonderful ones for me. The problem, though, is that especially with the rise of the digital universe, there's been a sort of food fight that's been set off because, you know, we have major technological innovations. Books and reading are now on a screen, and a lot of the rules have changed. And emerging into that marketplace have been the biggest companies in the world, Amazon, Apple, Google, and for reasons that we all understand, generally we like to think of these companies, because they're great innovators, as being very cool. Mm-hmm. And they are. Mm-hmm. They are every bit as ham-fisted and greedy as the robber barons of the late 19th century. And by definition, a corporation has always got to be out for its own shareholders over and above everything else. And we have not dealt with what is happening in the digital marketplace with an awareness that, our lunch is being eaten mm-hmm. by these immense and increasingly powerful entities. So a company like Amazon has essentially devastated the book marketplace. They've put the rise of online buying mass digitization has put Amazon at the top of the heap. They sell over half of the books sold in the United States in across all platforms, whether we're talking about physical books or ebooks or independently published ebooks, or they are the biggest show in town. And they are interested only in what is good for Amazon. And when they talk about being interested in what is good for readers, they are interested in what is good for readers only as long as it's good for Amazon's business. So, for example, a company that promised that they would always sell books at least 30% off of the list price no longer does that. And the cost of all of these things has been, as is true in many industries, to concentrate the market, to reward the best-selling authors even more heavily, while lesser-known or unknown writers are forced, in order to get recognition, to write for free, so that the young novelists that I know are sort of commanded by their publishers, for example, to spend an hour a day on Facebook and Twitter and other social media outlets, mm-hmm. hoping to build a readership. Well, what they're really doing there is writing for free. And you have many, many websites that demand that writers write for free or almost for nothing. So you have authors' incomes dwindling at one end, even as they get greater at the other. And it's an almost impossible problem when you add in the degree to which copyright is being devalued in the name of fair use. Mm-hmm. Last week, something called the Internet Archive announced proudly that they were a semi-finalist for a $100 million grant from the MacArthur Foundation. And what were they going to do with this $100 million? They were going to digitize 4 million books. And the idea was to bring them to readers across the United States. Well, that's all well and good, except for one fact. Most of those 4 million books are currently in copyright. Mm-hmm. And so they were doing nothing more than talking about stealing 4 million books from their rightful owners, the publishers and the authors, who have a right to both control what happens to those books and, for a limited period of time, which is called a copyright, to enjoy the profits from those works. And it's like it's beyond anybody's knowledge that copyrights exist. And yet, if I talked about a plan to take 4 million automobiles off the streets and put them to the free use of Americans across the country, people would talk about communism. So it is a dreadful problem for American authors, and it's one that makes me really concerned, because if people can't make a living writing, it's a fantasy to think that we are going to have the same diversity of voices mm-hmm. in this country. And that diversity of voices is essential to the functioning of our democracy. It's essential to innovation. It's essential to American culture. And by sucking the rewards out of that system, Google and Apple and Amazon and everybody else, they are essentially silencing, the American literary community.
And on the one hand, I congratulate them for the $100 million MacArthur grant, but it would seem that with the $100 million, maybe a portion of that could go to authors and publishers.
Yeah, there's no discussion of that part. What really frosts me is, of course, the people who are going to do that digitizing and the librarians who are going to curate that collection, they are not proposing to work for free. Mm-hmm. They have no interest in working without being paid for their labors, but somehow they think authors and publishers should. And it's a remarkable remarkable confusion. So, yes, I am concerned, and I believe that we're right. But whether we will prevail is a different issue. I took a trip, it was part of the State Department Speakers Program, about 4 years ago, to Russia. And one of the things that was most amazing to me was that Vladimir Putin, if nothing else, is clever. And instead of following, the Stalinist tactics of throwing writers in a gulag, Putin had found a far more effective way of silencing them, which is he doesn't protect copyrights. Mm-hmm. So if an author publishes a book in Russia, and they're not somebody on Mr. Putin's very short approved list, the book is immediately copied, digitized, and put on the internet for free by pirates. And that author literally makes no money for his or her labors. And guess what? You tell me, give me the name of the great young Russian novelist. This in the country that gave birth to Tolstoy, to Chekhov, to Dostoevsky, to Turgenev, a country with probably the richest literary tradition in the world. And yet you can't name a great young Russian novelist, because there's no reward left in writing in Russia because of Mr. Putin's plan to devalue copyright. So that's what's really at stake. And that's the best example I can give.
Well, thank you. These are important subjects. Scott, on May 18th, I know you're going to be talking about these important subjects as well as your important new book, Testimony. We're thrilled to have you, and we're looking forward to seeing you there. Scott Turow, thanks for joining us today with the Smithsonian Associates, and we will see you on May 18th at the Ripley Center in Washington, D.C. Scott, thanks, and good luck with this book.
Thank you, Paul.
We'll be talking to you soon. Thank you, Scott.